This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, it's the most wonderful time of the year. No argument there. Many of you have received invites to holiday parties and New Year's Eve functions, but as the celebrations kick into full swing, our guest this evening has some words of caution. Don't drink and drive. Do not be impaired. The statistics are alarming. Every day, 28 people die on our roadways as a result of drunk driving. That's more than 10,000 people killed every year. Add to that number 345,000 people injured on the roadways yearly because of drunk driving and, again, of being impaired. Now that we understand the seriousness of the problem, let's talk about solutions. My guests this evening, Lieutenant Douglas Murray with the Prince George's County Police Department and Corporal Mike Rose, a DUI expert, also with the Prince George's County Police Department. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you, your questions, your concerns, your comments, something that you can add to the conversation to help us move this conversation forward. Officers, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for what you do every day in your service. Corporal Rose, we know that drunk driving is deadly. I think everyone knows it. So why do people still do it?
It's something that we as police officers ask ourselves that every day. It's a decision that oftentimes what happens is people don't make a plan before they begin drinking. When people consume alcoholic beverages or when people ingest chemicals into their body, it allows them to make poor decisions. And the problem is people don't make a plan before they go out. And one of the things we stress is that, especially during this holiday season, is people need to have a plan before they go out. If you have a plan before you go out as far as making a plan, how you're going to get back home, how you're going to get from point A to point B before you start consuming things that are going to make you make those bad decisions, then that's what you need to do. So that's why I think people still are making those bad decisions is because oftentimes they don't make those plans.
Lieutenant Murray, a lot of folks, you know, have a beer or whatever they have to drink, and they say, I'm okay, I can drive, and they walk away from the party thinking everything's okay, right? And yet they get behind the wheel, reality kicks in after there's been some horrific accident. Can you talk about that a little bit for us in terms of the decision making? The corporal sort of hit that for a moment. Is it because there's a certain societal thing of saying that you're okay, or is it because you're impaired and you don't know that you're not okay?
A lot of it, I believe, is people don't know. They assume that they're capable of driving, and they make that decision to get behind the wheel. And lots of times when we interview the driver, if they're willing to speak to us, they'll say they didn't think that they were that impaired. They felt that they could drive. And that is a big reason that this happens.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Corporal Mike Rose, you are a DUI expert, right? So what makes driving more difficult than, say, walking while you're drunk? And what I mean by that is an issue also, right? Folks can be walking in areas, crossing the street, they're impaired, they're thinking, I'm not behind the wheel. So what makes driving sort of more difficult than sort of walking if you're drinking? It may sound obvious, but...
Well, people don't understand. Driving is a very complex task. You're doing dozens and dozens of different things while you're driving a motor vehicle. And people don't understand that. The mental faculties that it takes and the physical faculties that it takes to operate a motor vehicle are very great. You have to think, how do I operate that motor vehicle? How much pressure do I put on that gas pedal? How much time does it take to get my foot from the accelerator to the brake? How do I get from point A to point B? I have to think about, where do I make my right-hand turn, my left-hand turn? How do I hold my hands on the steering wheel? How do I sit in the seat? How do I, turn the wheel so that the vehicle stays where it needs to go? How does it? All those things together, You know, you don't have to do those oftentimes while you're walking down the road. And then if you think about it, you're guiding a 3,000-pound piece of metal down the roadway at speeds that, you know, the speeds that people are traveling, you know, 60 miles an hour. And then to think about how long it's going to take to stop that 3,000 piece, you know, of metal from hitting another person or hitting another vehicle or hitting a wall or a tree, something like that. And when you factor in, when you put chemicals into your body, such as alcohol or drugs, it's going to affect the time that it takes for you to make those decisions, if you're even able to make those decisions at all. There's oftentimes we go to crash scenes and it looks like there's been no decision made at all because that person just has not reacted at all to the circumstances around their crash.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Lieutenant Douglas Murray with the Prince George's County Police Department, and Corporal Mike Rose. We're talking about drunk driving and also driving while impaired, and we're going to have the officer speak specifically about that. Our caller on the line now, Larry, I think, is sort of going to take us there. Larry is calling from Waldorf. Go right ahead, Larry.
You're actually talking about drunk driving. I've been driving a truck for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's probably one-fifth of the problem. Back before we had the cell phones, we had people filling out checks, doing their work, reading magazines. Because I'm driving a truck, I can look right down at you.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've got people texting. 90% of the time, you're doing something that I've got to counteract to. And the drunk driver, I see you long before I get to you. It's just nobody I have that I can contact to say, hey, I've got this guy. I see him weaving from lane to lane.
Mm-hmm.
Can't make up his mind. So, you know, those are things that we're dealing with.
Corporal Rose, Larry brings up a great point, and I know we had talked early before we came on the air talking about, yeah, drunk driving is one, but it's only one part of being impaired. And, mm-hmm. you know, we could talk about sort of whether it's alcohol or drugs, or is texting considered being impaired?
That's more of a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
We separate that out because we separate distracted driving out, because things like texting, things like eating, drinking, reading the newspaper, putting on makeup, doing your hair, things like that, those are distractions. Because those are things that you that are not the chemically induced, whereas the drugs and the alcohol are. So those are kind of factored out when they do. When you look at crash numbers, they actually have a specific category for those distracted driving crashes.
And so when we're talking about impaired, then you're talking about drugs, alcohol.
Specifically,
are we seeing one predominant over the other? Because we hear drunk driving, but we rarely sort of connect to impaired driving.
Believe it or not, drug driving is actually on the rise. A lot of people don't understand that. You still do hear more and more about the alcohol and drunk driving, but right now, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is actually has recently kicked off a new impaired driving enforcement effort, which is called If You Feel Different, You Drive Different, which is geared towards the drug-impaired driver. Because what we're finding is there are a significant number of drug-impaired drivers that are out there. And the problem also we're finding with drug-impaired drivers is oftentimes what's happening is people are taking drugs and then they're mixing it with alcohol. And the problem you have when you get that combination is somebody who just takes one drink may not be impaired by the alcohol, but if they're taking certain prescription medications with that one drink, that can put them to where they cannot safely operate that motor vehicle. And oftentimes people don't understand that. They don't read their pill bottles where it says, don't consume alcohol while taking this medication.
Lieutenant Murray, we know that there are checkpoints during the holiday season, right? And so if you're driving impaired, if you're drunk driving, and obviously drunk driving comes under impaired, you are risking being arrested. Can the police arrest this issue away?
I would say no, because I've been here. I've been with the police department.
And should you try?
Yes, we should try. But I would say it's going to have to be a change. Societal change. It's going to have to be we can't really enforce our way out of it. And I want to just go back to what Larry said. He's right as far as the texting is concerned. It is a problem. It's a serious problem. And it's usually younger people. So hopefully if they're listening to the Daily Drum, they're getting the point that you really can't text and drive. We have to operate our computers as we drive our cruises. And I'm telling you, it's a distraction. And if you don't pay attention, you're going to crash.
Officer Rose, you say Officer Murray says it's a societal issue. What's your sense of where we are in the society with driving while impaired? Is it changing? Are you seeing an uptick? Where are we today?
Oh, we've made a dent in it, but it still is a great issue that's out there that still does need to be addressed, because we as a culture still believe that driving is our right. And that's one of the issues we have, is everyone believes you have a right to drive. So being as you have that right, you need to get from point A to point B. People don't want to be encumbered by these laws. So we're not going to enforce our way out of it. We do need to have that educational component in there to educate people as far as alternate means. We're doing a great advances as far as finding alternate means for people. One of the best things that's been happening recently is ride sharing. With the advent of things such as the Washington Regional Alcohol Program, they have especially during the holiday programs, they partner with Lyft to actually give out rides to people during specific hours during the holiday season for people that have had too much to drink, so that they won't go out there and drive. With rideshare with Uber. Uber people now will call Uber rather than get into a car and drive, rather than do that. Where in the past, people weren't as willing to call a taxi cab just because there was always that stigma with mm-hmm. a taxi. But now, you know, everyone has Uber on or Lyft on their smartphones.
And isn't that interesting? Because now we're talking about imaging in some way, right? Yeah. And how that looks. And we also know that you have Sober Ride out there, mm-hmm. Which is important. Tonight we're talking about being safe out there on the roads during the holiday season. It can be a dangerous time. And Officers Murray and Rose from the Prince George's County Police Department are here to help us know how best to take care of ourselves. Also, I'm assuming to drive defensively and also not to drive while impaired. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. And Korensky calling from South Carolina. Go right ahead.
I love this topic. I would like to ask, have there been any consideration to make the punishment more deterring? Mm-hmm. This has been going on for a long time. I'm 41, and I know people that have multiple DUIs, and it's just like they paid them off. They took a lot of debt. But, it's like, after you get two, can you just go to jail and never drive again?
Great question. Let me let the officers get to that, Korensky, because he's saying, should the laws be tougher than they are? We know folks who are driving while impaired have wreaked devastation on families. And we've seen some harsh punishments. Some folks believe that you have too many repeat offenders. Officer Murray, what are your thoughts on Korensky's point? Should there be tougher penalties for those who drive while impaired?
Yes, and there's a lot of that push from Montgomery County, where they had an officer killed during the DUI enforcement activity. Mm-hmm. And there's other things we can do. The driver interlock, which is what the Montgomery County initiative was. They managed to get that passed.
I want you to hold that thought, and I want to continue that. But before we go to break, I want folks to know maybe where they can go to get any kind of resources to help them in terms of educate others and educate themselves. Is there a place where some can go? Can they go to the county police website and find information about driving while impaired and sort of programs?
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration actually has a mobile app that you can actually go and download. It's called Safer Ride. And it's on the Google Play, and it's also on iTunes, so they can download that. Or you can go to NHTSA.gov, and they have statistics on there as far as what you can do as far as helping, you know, prevent impaired driving and also other traffic safety programs that are out there.
Tonight, we're talking about being safe out on the roads during the holiday season. Our guest tonight, Lieutenant Douglas Murray and Corporal Mike Rose from the Prince George's County Police Department. You will want to join in on this conversation if you're on the phone line. Hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Our conversation tonight on Insight is being safe out on the roadways during the holiday season. Don't drink and drive. Do not drive while you are impaired. Police will be out there trying to stop you from doing that, hurting yourself and possibly hurting others. The phone lines are open. We want you to be part of this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight in studio, Lieutenant Douglas Murray with the Prince George's County Police Department, and Corporal Mike Rose, also with the Prince George's County Police Department, and Corporal Rose is a DUI expert. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Rain calling from Suitland. Rain, go right ahead with your question or comment.
I have a question. I've a couple of times on the Beltway, particularly, I see people driving recklessly. And I don't know whether to call 911 or the 301 number for the non-emergency call.
Mm-hmm.
What's your suggestion?
911. You don't want to be distracted yourself. So 911 would be the quickest, and it would also get you to the proper jurisdiction. The Beltway, the Capitol Beltway in our county, is the responsibility of the Maryland State Police. But, of course, if the situation is an emergency, a county police officer would respond.
You know, I know it's just a matter of seconds before an accident would occur once in a while. And I did have an opportunity to see someone speed past me. And a few minutes later, they were involved in a terrible accident on the Beltway. So I just feel like it wouldn't hurt to call.
And Corporal Murray, is that suggested if you see anything that is suspicious in terms of driving, weaving, that they should call police?
Yes, ma'am, and especially if you can get a tag number, because it might help us later on, especially if the vehicle, if it's a hit-and-run situation, or if we get there and now there's two mangled cars and nobody's alive to tell us what happened, you can tell us, this is what I saw prior to impact.
And Lieutenant Murray, I gave you a different title, and then we have Corporal Rose here. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And speaking of numbers, that non-emergency number in Prince George's County, 301-352-1200, 301-352-1200. So that we should make use of that. Corporal Rose, is there a prototypical person who drives impaired that you look for, that you see most often? Is there such a thing?
No, there's not. That's the big problem with impaired driving is there is no typical person. It can be any person. Anybody. And the problem is it could be somebody that you would never think. It could be that person that goes to a holiday party, never thinks to drink and drive, but makes that poor choice to have several drinks, thinks they're okay, and gets behind the wheel of that vehicle because they don't feel that they're impaired. They feel that, as in the past, a lot of people felt, well, I'm just buzzed. I'm not drunk. And that's one of the things that in the past we've tried to also instill in people is just because you're buzzed, you shouldn't be getting behind the wheel even if you're feeling buzzed.
Mm.
Anytime you're feeling impaired at all, that is not the time that you should be getting behind the wheel of a vehicle at all. Like I said earlier, before you start drinking or before you consume any kind of an alcoholic beverage, that's when you need to make the plan. That's when you should have a plan on how am I going to get home? How am I going to get back to where I need to be? It's not later on to make the plan because you'll be making poor decisions later on.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our conversation tonight, being safe out on the roadways during the holiday season, not drinking and driving, not being impaired. That means drugs, drinking, anything that will impair you as you're driving to hurt yourself or possibly hurt others. The phone lines are open. Let's go back to the phone lines. Dee is calling from Oxon Hill. Go right ahead, Dee.
Hello. I'm sitting here driving, and I'm sitting here listening to this. And it baffles me how everyone acts like they don't do anything. But I see every day older people texting on the phone, going 80 miles per hour on the Beltway.
Hmm.
But no one wants to talk about that. But think about it. Everyone that's on the panel right now has done it. You guys act like you guys don't do none of that.
Have you done it, Dee?
Of course, I'm doing it right now.
Okay, and so your point is what, that more of an issue should be made about texting, or that everyone should just admit that they do it and then do what?
I prefer that you admit that you've done it,
mm-hmm,
and that you're trying to correct it.
Well, I think that's what
I don't see that the young people do it all the time. I see older people do it all the time.
All right. Well,
I see cops doing it. I see cops going 80 miles per hour on the Beltway, and I'm riding right beside them,
mm-hmm,
not getting pulled over. None of that.
All right. Can I?
Well, let's let Lieutenant Murray address your points, Dee. Thank you so much.
It's a very good point, and one of the things that I want to just clarify. And when the law was written, there is a public safety exception. So you'll see police officers, firemen, and state highway people, they have to talk on the phone,
mm-hmm,
and they have to text. And mm-hmm, so it excludes the police. And I know sometimes you might see a police officer who's in a marked police car, he's not in uniform, he's on the phone, he's texting. I'm not saying that that officer is on official duty, but we can't say whether he is or isn't. But there is an exclusion for public safety. And you're right, everybody knows they shouldn't do it. And yet they do it. I drive an unmarked car because of my rank, and people pass me all the time, and they're on the phone. And lots of times I wouldn't get where I'm going if I stopped everybody, but every now and then I will stop them and say, I just want you to know who I am. Plain gray car with silver hubcaps and an antenna. I'm probably the police, and you probably shouldn't do that in front of me.
And I would say this is probably a topic for another show. And what I mean by that is that it's such an important issue. Everyone pretty much has a phone now. To Dee's point, I think all of us have seen people on the phone. All of us may have been on the phone. I know I have before. My wife tells me to stop doing it. I don't do it that much. But, you know, when I do it, I know it's the wrong thing to do. So I do think that's a conversation to have because it is so omnipresent out there. But staying sort of with the issue now about being impaired outside of texting, Corporal Rose, can you talk a little bit about the sobriety test?
Mm-hmm.
What it is? Does it work for police? What do you see when you're doing the sobriety test? Just tell us a little bit about the sobriety test.
Okay, the majority of police officers out there we are trained in what are called the standardized field sobriety tests. This is a battery of three tests that are administered on an individual, and these are scientifically validated tests that discriminate well against an impaired versus a non-impaired driver. The three tests that are administered are an eye test, which is a horizontal gaze nystagmus test. Then there's two psychophysical tests, which are a walk and turn test and a one leg stand test. All three of these tests have clues that are associated with them. These clues were garnered from research that was done from the scientific community where they used impaired and non-impaired individuals that were dosed to different levels of impairment, and they got these clues to discriminate at what point the person was impaired or not. The officers administer these tests on an individual, and based upon the number of clues that they exhibit on each of these tests, the officers can discriminate an impaired versus a non-impaired individual.
Lieutenant Murray, I've got a sort of multi-pronged question here, right? One, do most people know what the legal limit is when drinking to drive? Two, what is the legal limit? and then I'm come back to when we're talking about drugs, how do we even determine what the limit is? And that's, I would think, is so nebulous to people. So let's deal with drinking. What is the legal limit in the state? And do most people know what it is to drink and drive?
If you're over a .08, you're intoxicated in the state of Maryland.
And how do we, is there any way to sort of quantify that if you're drinking? What is that? Is that a half a glass of beer, a half a glass of wine, a little bit of wine, an ounce?
As Mike is the expert, I'm going to defer. he can also answer the part about the drugs because he's a drug recognition expert. Okay.
An average drink is a 12-ounce beer, 5-ounce glass of wine, or 1.5 ounce of liquor, about 80 proof liquor. That is all what's considered a standard drink. If an average individual, average male, average female, consumes one average drink on an empty stomach within about 20 minutes, that person would be at about a .02.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 to 5 alcoholic beverages consumed in succession would get that person to about a .08. So that kind of gives you an understanding of where they go. The minute you start drinking an alcoholic beverage, your body is automatically starting to eliminate the alcohol from your body. So the key to drinking is, as long as you drink and don't drink to excess, you won't get drunk. The problem is when people drink to excess.
And not necessarily if I eat enough, that will sort of hide the drinking?
Eating will slack.
Murray is shaking his head going,
You wish there were these magic bullets, but there really isn't. Eating will slow it down.
Because some folks think this, right?
Right. There are a lot of misnomers out there. There's things such as people will say, well, if I drink milk before, it'll coat my stomach, then I won't get drunk as quick. If you do eat, it will slow the absorption down. But here's the reality. When you drink alcohol, it's got to get into your bloodstream. Once it gets into your bloodstream, it goes to your brain. It impairs you. So there's nothing that's going to stop alcohol from getting you impaired. It may slow it down a little bit, but it's still going to get into your body, and it's still going to impair you. So all the little things that people think that they're going to not get themselves impaired, all it's doing is slowing the process down a little bit. So that, you know, they're still going to get impaired. Now, as far as with the drugs, now, in the police, as far as police officers, the way we look at things is we look at somebody's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. The first thing we do is when we're driving down the roadway and we look for people that are unsafe to operate a motor vehicle. Are you weaving back and forth? Are you not able to keep your vehicle in the traffic lane? Are you tailgating somebody? Are you driving too fast? Are you not stopping for a red light? Are you driving with your headlights off at night? There's just a lot of them. I mean, the book of traffic violations is very thick, as you can see it right there. So we look for those violations. Some of them are more indicative of an impaired driver than other ones. As far as with drugs, it's a little harder than alcohol. With alcohol, we have set standards. Once you get to a .08, the legislators of Maryland have said that you are under the influence of alcohol. You face a $1,000 fine and 1 year in jail. That's just the way it is. I mean, that once you get to a .07, you face 60 days in jail and a $500 fine. That's the way the law is. Now, as far as drugs, the problem is you don't have those numbers that you have. You just have to. There are specifically trained officers that can tell if somebody is impaired by drugs. They're called drug recognition experts, and those are the officers that are able to discriminate those impaired by drugs and not impaired by drugs. So
the officers are out there. They're watching and waiting, and hopefully you won't be one of those that they have to nab. I'm sure that's not what they want to do during the holiday season. We're talking about driving while impaired, not doing it, and how to be safe out on the roadways this holiday season. Our experts are here from the Prince George's County Police Department. We're going to continue this conversation right after this quick timeout. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I am Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher tonight. A very important topic. It is the holiday season. Many of us are out on the roads, whether it's shopping, whether it's going to holiday parties. And what we don't want to do is drink and drive or be behind the wheel and be impaired. And even if you are not one of those people, you want to make sure someone isn't on the roadways that could affect your life in the worst way. The phone lines are open for this conversation, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Lieutenant Douglas Murray with the Prince George's County Police Department and Corporal Mike Rose, also with the Prince George's County Police Department. Corporal Rose also is a DUI expert with the county police. Let's go back to the phone lines. Adrian is calling from Oxon Hill, and Adrian wants to talk about community policing and addressing the issue of drunk driving. Go right ahead, Adrian.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. My question or my comment really about community policing would be more of the standard, or what can we do more so, or what the law enforcement community could do more so than just, hey, drunk driving, don't do it, and more of like getting into the community and speaking to people and, you know, make more, you know, face-to-name contact and things like that, and to try and emphasize the problems with drunk driving and things more so than what, you know, what I guess what you would come across in like middle and high school, because I don't see that happening as much as, or interactions as much as with adults than when you're in school.
So Corporal Rose, has that increase, decrease, stayed static? I think we've seen over the years, sometimes you do see more of even a national push about drinking and driving, or do we see more of that during the holiday season? What's your sense of that?
Well, I understand what the caller's saying. We do actually go out into the schools, and we do during the health classes, oftentimes we'll go in. During the high school, right before they are learning to drive, we do have a program where we have what are called drunk goggles. Mm-hmm. And what they are is they're glasses that the students will put on, that what they do is they simulate different levels of alcohol impairment, because we're not going to let the students drink.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we have them put those goggles on, and we put them through different tasks such as picking up keys. We'll toss balls at them. We'll have them walk the line. We'll have them do some of the sobriety tests just to show them what it would feel like if they're out there actually impaired. To show them how bad it is and why they shouldn't be drinking and driving. So we do that. We also go to community events oftentimes. We actually have recently started going into workplace. A lot of times these large corporations have monthly work meetings, things like that. We've gone into those, and we've brought those goggles into those work meetings, things of that nature too. So we do actually go out into the community to stress the importance of not drinking and driving and get that message out there. Because again, we as the police, we don't want to meet you by putting handcuffs on you. We would much rather educate you beforehand to let you know why you shouldn't be drinking and driving, rather than meet you on the back end of putting handcuffs on you or having to knock on your family's door and letting you know, hey, your son, your daughter, your mother, your father, your sister, your brother is not coming home anymore because they were involved in an impaired driving crash.
And I would take it that these programs even kick in and pick up during prom season and graduation season, when these young folks are really out and about on the roads going to different parties and celebrations.
Yes, most definitely.
Lieutenant Douglas, talk a little bit about the numbers. What are you seeing out there at this point as we nearing here the tail end of the year, specifically in the county, with driving while impaired or drunk driving?
My shop is, Mike and I are from the Special Operations Division. We are the Traffic Enforcement Unit. However, it's kind of a misnomer. Every precinct does traffic enforcement. However, we compile the numbers, and for drunk driving arrests this year, so far, we've made 741 drunk driving arrests. And that was as of the 3rd of December. Last year, total, we made 841. So as you can see, we're on our way to matching last year. The year before was kind of a decline. We had triple sixes with the devil's number for the total of drunk drives. Prince George, the Special Operations Division handles fatal accidents. Some of the officers that come under me, they're called the Collision Analysis and Reconstruction Unit. Those are the officers you don't want to ever meet late at night because they're not bringing good news. They've compiled their stats. They're questioned every day about what the stats are in the county. So far this year, we've had 45 crashes with 46 people killed. 13 of those involved drunk drivers. We had 8 motorcycle fatals. We had critical injury accidents, and these are just what my unit handles. This is not what the district, the officers on the district handle.
And so the numbers that you've shared so far, are we seeing an uptick,
yes,
especially in the fatalities? And
yes,
is there any way to quantify that, why that is?
It fluctuates year to year. Unfortunately, most years Prince George's County is high. We have gone down in the past. Like I said, last year we got accolades because we did do a lot better, but it fluctuates. My unit also responds to critical injury accidents where it's assumed the person will die, but then they later don't die. And of that, we had 2 of those accidents of the 13. So you can see we responded to over 50 crashes where we thought people were going to die. And that's way too high. But that's just the Prince George's County Police. That doesn't include the state police or U.S. Park Police that also handle fatal accidents. And another aside, when it comes to drug driving, one of the things that I've noticed, and I've been following it for the last few months, every day it comes out the number of handgun arrests we make.
Mm-hmm.
It would almost seem irrelevant. However, what I notice isn't the probable cause for making those arrests for the handguns. The officer's making a traffic stop because the driver is weaving or he's got a taillight out of it. And when they approach the car, they always write in their narrative, "I detected a strong odor of marijuana." And that's getting them in the car to get the gun. We probably get 4 to 5 guns per shift.
Hmm.
And almost every one of those reports says the same thing, strong odor of marijuana. And then they can ask everybody to step out of the car. And they're finding that the drivers are, I'm not saying impaired, but they've been smoking marijuana.
Hmm. Wow. So there is a direct correlation there.
Yes.
Corporal Rose, police often set up checkpoints, right? And we in the media will even announce it that these are the sites where these checkpoints mm-hmm. will be. Yet there are people who will still get caught drinking and driving, even though they may know that they're going through a checkpoint in mm-hmm. the area where they live or where they're traveling.
Yep.
Does that surprise you?
Not at all, because as I stated earlier, when you ingest alcohol, it makes you do, makes you do silly things. Like you said, when we set these checkpoints up, if you've ever even driven past one of them, they're a light show.
They're intimidating. And is that yeah. the point?
Well, they're more educational. They're not. We don't want them to be intimidating. What we want them to be is an educational experience. Because what we're hoping is people that drive through them, we want them to take that message that they've just entered a sobriety checkpoint. We want them to take that message to their friends. And that they tell 2 friends, and they tell 2 friends, and they tell 2 friends. That we want them to know we're out there. We put them on different roadways throughout the county. We do them at different times. We've done them during the daytime. We've done them during the nighttime. We've done them during the happy hours. So we do them all different times because, again, it's not only it's an enforcement tool, but it's actually an educational tool. And believe it or not, we like it when we don't have to arrest people. Because what that's showing us is that people are getting the message. When we do have to arrest people, what that's showing us is, hey, they're not getting the message. So we do those checkpoints. We set them up in the high crash areas where—
I was going to ask you, how do you decide where you set them up?
Yeah, we set them up in the high crash areas where there's impaired driving crashes or impaired driving arrests. That's where we set up the sobriety checkpoints. We'll be doing those, periodically throughout the year. We will also be doing saturation patrols throughout the holiday season. We'll be doing saturation patrols.
What does that mean?
What a saturation patrol is it's similar in nature. What we do is we'll look at crash data. We'll look at where impaired driving crashes have been. And what we'll do is we'll have a group of officers that will go and they'll saturate that area during a predetermined time when we figure when the impaired drivers are out there. Typically, it's between 9 p.m. and 5 a.m. That's that key time when a lot of impaired drivers are out there. We'll have officers go out there and target specific areas looking for those impaired drivers. So we'll saturate that specific area looking for impaired drivers to try and, again, help in the future to reduce crashes in those specific areas. So that's what those saturation patrols are. And we'll do those through the holiday season. And, again, we'll do this throughout all the holidays, not just Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Lieutenant Murray, can a driver refuse a breathalyzer test?
Yes.
And under what guise could I refuse it?
There's a couple. One, you could attempt to take the test but really not do it, and we'll charge you with a refusal. Or you can just outright refuse, and then you're going to be suspended, and there's administrative penalties.
So there's a price to pay yes. to refusing, but you can refuse. Are breath test results always accurate?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a scientific instrument. It's been, I mean, in and out, it's been tested over and over again.
Do some folks try to challenge it in court?
Oh, every time. Yeah. I mean, and if you ask defense attorneys, they'll give you a different opinion. But the scientific community will show you in and out that those instruments are highly accurate. I mean, whatever that instrument is spitting out as far as what you blew into it, that's what's in your system at the time of the testing.
And lots of times at a checkpoint, we'll do a PBT, a preliminary breath test. That's not admissible in court against you. However, if you think that you're not drunk, it's advisable that you take that, because that will tell us right then, if you blow below a 5, we're going to let you go.
How can I get automobile insurance after a drunk driving conviction? Does it keep me from getting automobile insurance?
Good luck.
You're going to get it, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah. Maryland, there's always a program out there where you will get insurance. It's just a matter of how much you're going to have to pay.
And once again, there is a price to pay.
Right. A typical drunk driving arrest can cost you up to $10,000 in fines and everything that goes along with it. So.
And that is enough of a deterrent if we end it right there. He is Lieutenant Douglas Murray with the Prince George's County Police Department, and he is Corporal Mike Rose, also with the Prince George's County Police Department. We thank you so much for your information, your attention, and again, your service. We hope that this conversation helped you. You learned something, and it will keep you on the right path as you are traveling down the roadways this holiday season. Well, that is the Daily Drum on HR Voices.